Welcome to Whistleblowers Series 2, the start of a new year. Tonight, Psycho Killers. My name's Greg Kerr. We're going to take you, first of all, to the recent and unfolding series of murders from Western Australia. The Claremont murders.
Killings trial was one of the most expensive and longest running criminal cases in WA legal history. Tegan Sapple tomorrow will draw a line under an unprecedented trial.
Michael, nearly 100 days in court, 2,000 gigabytes of data, and a cost of more than $10 million. The stats speak for themselves, but at the heart of this trial are three murdered women and three heartbroken families who've waited a quarter of a century for justice. Is this middle-aged man the monster who killed three young women and terrified a generation? Tomorrow, Bradley Edwards' fate will be decided by one person, Justice Stephen Hall. He alone will hand down verdicts in a triple murder trial that captivated our city.
I've got to say, I've never seen this degree of anticipation in the profession about a single verdict before.
For 95 days, Bradley Edwards sat in the dock as evidence from 200 witnesses piled up. Prosecutors claiming the unassuming Telstra technician evolved from a cross-dressing rapist into a serial killer. The 51-year-old remained calm as the final movements of Sarah Spears, Jane Rimmer and Kira Glennon were examined in graphic detail. Sitting across from the victims' families, who were a constant presence in the courtroom after waiting nearly a quarter of a century for justice.
It was never going to be an open and shut case, and it never proved to be that. And I would think there may well still be a turn or a twist left in it.
The nightmare began in 1996 when 18-year-old secretary Sarah Spears vanished from Claremont after calling a taxi.
I can't see any reason why she wouldn't be with us if she could be with us.
Now that last voice, we can't see any reason why she wouldn't be with us if she wanted to be with us, was the voice of Carol Spears, Sarah's mother. Now, I'm going to bring in our crime investigator, investigative journalist, and all-round writer of crime, and in looking at the edges of mainstream media, Jennifer Stone. Jennifer, Happy New Year, and welcome back to Whistleblowers.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead, Jennifer. We know that he was convicted of these murders, but you have pointed out that Sarah's body has never been found. What information have you got that police are still looking at? And as we heard there, the justice has said that this story may not be over.
That's right, the twists. And when they say twists, wow, maybe we've got to look at the evidence a little bit harder. Sarah Ellen Spears went missing January 1996. Now, when I read about the three murders, I thought, right, Sarah Ellen Spears, they do believe she got murdered, but her body has never been found. So then people list them as the missing persons. And normally that's handled by a different type of police, not the homicide. And it takes a long while till they get to the cold case homicide. So how they look at a case. So we know that she rang for a taxi after a night out. And that was the link between the three women. They had all been partying the night before. Then they were all going home. And that's when it happened. But this is just a sleepy old town. But of course, when I look into the murders and the missing persons, I always think, well, whatever town, we've got a drug dealer around. I don't think I know of any town where there's no drugs. And I can remember talking to the police and they were asking me, how can the drugs get to little country towns? And I go, well, people send it in the stuff and it gets picked out. They know where it is. It is very calculated. It is very organised crime at a very high level because they don't get caught, allegedly. But if they do, well, how much is it for a blind eye? And that's where you got to think. This is the biggest gang we have, is the police. To expose the corruption in police, you got to start, well, how do they work on their crimes? So I know through one, there's a couple of cases they've been using a forensic pathologist or something like that. And it's to do with New South Wales at the moment. And it links into Queensland. And the guy wasn't even registered. And he links into all these crimes. And now they're looking at the evidence again because it's come up that this particular forensic guy, scientist guy, was not registered. So where did he get all his knowledge from and that sort of thing?
Let's come back to that.
5 months on, 23-year-old childcare worker Jane Rimmer disappeared.
I just have sympathy for them. How they could do it, I just don't know.
And lawyer Kira Glennon, who was 27, vanished the following March after a night out with colleagues.
We are a strong family, and I don't cry easily, but Kira's alive. We believe that.
At the heart of the case against Bradley Edwards, a DNA match that blew this decades-old cold case wide open. DNA linked to the 51-year-old that was allegedly found under Kira Glennon's fingernails. But Edwards' lawyers argued the sample could have been contaminated by swabs from his 1995 Karrakatta rape victim.
Much will turn on what His Honour finds in relation to the alleged contamination of the DNA and its reliability.
Bradley Edwards denies all three murders. If convicted, it could ultimately be that microscopic trace of DNA that seals his fate. Tegan Sapwell, Nine News.
Let's bring in Tracy Vo in Claremont now. Tracy, tomorrow will be the final chapter in a story that has haunted that suburb.
So there we go, Jennifer. Continue on that line of thinking with the contaminated evidence and some of the so-called experts who are not really qualified.
Yes, well, I only got told about that probably the last couple of months of 2020 about that particular forensic guy. So you just got to realise that when they were looking at Ivan Milat's case and the hair on Caroline Walters, that also got sent to the UK. Now, also, if we go through the same forensic pathologist who was matching on the DNA, also links to Peter Falconio. Mm. Now, there's a pattern there. Peter Falconio and Sarah Spears are both missing. Mm. They're both missing persons. So you start to think, well, is there something in it? And if you notice, the DNA only linked to Sierra Glennon. So Jane Rimmer, that's another question. What did they have on it? And remember, if it was a judge alone case, there's no jury on this. But to have a jury on something that's so old, it is quite hard for the partial look at the law because of they're looking at a crime that's so well publicised. People have a verdict that if the police have arrested someone. And remember, this person was actually brought from Queensland, where he was serving time in prison, to Western Australia. And it's been a period of years to get him across to Western Australia. So he's declared declared himself as not guilty. Mm. And it's interesting, so did Ivan Milat. Mm. But then you think, well, of course they've got to do that because that's how the law stands. If they make a mistake in the case, the Crown, that's when they can bring up a mistake and take it to the appeals court and get let off. As we've noticed, there's a lot have been doing that by lawyer X in Victoria. So you start to think. So when I started working on this, would have been like 2012, I started to realise I'd already opened Juanita Nelson. And I'd gone on to the Luna Park fires. And then I started to realise that there was another lady called Mountain Mist who linked into Juanita Nelson, and we were both spot on where she was. And then I couldn't understand fully, but there was a pattern within all these astrology crimes. There was nothing mentioned here in Australia. It's not classified as a science, so it can't be used in a court of law as a as evidence. But it's interesting that they link to, you know, they use the bi-wheel and the patterns form. So the pattern of Pluto shows there's a death indicator at the time that the person's taken. Then there's Saturn, and you start to think, how did the guy know this, or the person? Unless they knew the date of birth of this person, otherwise it doesn't work. So then you start to think, they're not random acts. They've actually been, you know, watched and thought about to get to this pattern. Yeah, which is interesting.
It is interesting, Jen. So let's just have a look at what police generally go on, and that is scientific evidence. And
crime scene where Jane Rimmer's body was found has given harrowing evidence as he was grilled about how close he got to her remains. The defence team accused him of going further into the bush than he claimed, despite the contamination risk.
They're the microscopic fibres prosecutors say link Jane Rimmer and Kira Glennon to the accused Claremont killer. Tiny clues allegedly found on their bodies after they were discovered in bushland. Brad Edwards' lawyers have suggested the fibres got there through contamination. Now police, forensics, even funeral directors are being grilled about how close they got to the bodies, what they were wearing, the cars they drove. Retired detective Jonathan Adams today gave evidence. He was in charge of the crime scene when Jane Rimmer's body was found. He was shown video of the burial site, which was shielded from the public. Telling the trial he could see the body from the roadway, the image burned in his mind. Once you see a body in bush like that, it doesn't leave you. I can recall that as clearly as yesterday. Jonathan Adams said he got 4 to 6 metres away, defence lawyers asking whether he got closer and was denying it because he was embarrassed due to the contamination risk. He said no. Jonathan Adams was also in charge of the exhibit store where items taken from the Karrakatta rape victim were held before being hand-delivered to the Macro Task Force. He admitted there was a discrepancy between what was labelled on the bags and what was recorded on the police system, agreeing it wasn't accurate. Bradley Edwards has admitted to the rape but maintains he's not guilty of murder. Tegan Sapwell, Nine News.
So people do go into other theories, and Jennifer's gone into astrology there, and you know, sometimes scientific evidence is accurate, but in this case there is certainly some conjecture.
Yes, they say Sarah Ellen Spears was last seen as she waited for a taxi on the corner of a busy street at 2 a.m. Now, if this was not reported as a missing person, they would have DNA tested the taxi to make sure she had gotten in it. But by the time they probably looked at it, the DNA would have been corrupted. You know, they never said that they found her DNA in the taxi even.
So Sarah Spears, whose remains have yet to be located, and we now have a conviction for two of these murders and one unsolved. Do you think we'll ever get to the bottom of it? I mean, police that have been investigating this are holding hopes that they may one day find Sarah Spears' body. Has the other method you're talking about there, things like astrology, and has it ever uncovered missing bodies?
No, it hasn't. Except for the Claydon Bade case, or Bade and Clay in Queensland, that actually fitted the astrology, and it fitted it so well, but that I thought, the body would have gone missing. So that was somebody I believed who allegedly knew about the pattern, you know, which was interesting.
Well, it gives you an interesting way to look at these things. So we'll keep you updated on that one. And Jennifer, no doubt during the new year, will come up with any information that comes to light.
We'll just say that there was a convicted sex offender, was deported from Western Australia, I believe, back to the UK in 1999. So this particular person was first convicted age 16 in 1986. I won't say the name because that could be a problem. So we won't say that. But he had put a knife to a woman's throat and demanded cash before running off. He got 6 weeks detention. So you start to think, 2 years later, he popped up in Australia. The UK conviction date was 1990. He was charged for assaulting a police officer. So then 2 years later, he popped up in Australia. He followed his ex-wife and children here and landed in Manly, Sydney in January 1993 on a visitor's permit. Now you start to think, well, how did he stay here till 1999, April 1999, and could afford it? So you start to think that, you know, was he around? Now this person travelled to Queensland in 95, Melbourne and Adelaide before heading west. So was he in Perth or Claremont at that time? You would not know. But the only place that all these people can earn money is on the underground.
And you mentioned the link between Manly, Sydney, Australia and King's Cross.
Yes, Manly is a link. When I was in King's Cross, people would say to me, you've got to go and see the person in charge of the Comancheros in Manly to talk about King's Cross. And I thought that was really weird. How can somebody over in Manly be a link to King's Cross? But who controls the cross? How this game works? And you start to think, well, where was this man getting his money from? And could this be now a sex offender? But if he was moving drugs, how do they become a loyal drug dealer? The alleged controller holds some evidence. And that was a theory I came up with. I haven't been able to find it anywhere else. Okay. Yep.
There you go.
From one psycho killer to another. Stay with us, folks. Whistleblowers will be right back with a sad story of a well-known psycho killer and some never-before-heard-of information about his family. We'll return shortly here on Whistleblowers. Welcome back to Whistleblowers. You're listening to Psycho Killer by Talking Heads, and we're going to go straight into the very sad story of one of Australia's most well-known serial killers, one that Jennifer has investigated very thoroughly, and tonight you're going to hear some information that's never been heard before in mainstream media, but it's Ivan Robert Marco Milat, born in December 1944 and died last year, 27th of October 2019. For those that don't know, he was an Australian serial killer who was convicted of the Backpacker Murders in 1996. Milat was commonly known as the Backpacker Murderer. He assaulted, imprisoned, robbed and subsequently murdered 2 men and 5 women in New South Wales, Australia between 1989 and 1993, and as many police, people in the media, journalists who have investigated this case, and Jennifer Stone particularly, there is evidence, stories, and possibilities that there are not only more cold cases to be solved from Ivan Milat, but also other people involved in the murders. So before we go to Jennifer, let's have a listen to Tracy Grimshaw from Channel 9 News.
You're about to hear Ivan Milat for probably the first and certainly the last time. These are the exclusive deathbed interviews with detectives, some recorded just days ago. They're the serial killer's final words, and we'll show you the videos we filmed that were played to Milat as he lay dying.
Is there anything that you wanted to talk to us about at all, Ivan?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you to come here.
Okay.
Ivan Robert Marco Milat, the tapes.
I know how circumstantial cases work,
yeah.
And that's how they are. And
yeah.
The one thing usually ties in with another, but no one can tie me in with the murder, murders.
The voice of a cold-blooded killer denying his crimes.
There's no evidence, no police evidence, or whatever. And I argue that, and the judiciary... They just cover it up.
Playing ACA's exclusive interviews with the victims' families to their killer, trying to break Milat down. Deborah Everest's brother, Tim.
I don't know how to describe that.
Family interviews, quote, "What do you want me to watch this for? They only say what you expect them to say. I don't feel sorry for them. Why should I feel sorry for them?"
But today... Ivan is just about having a bit of a chat to see whether we can shed any light and maybe get a bit of closure or for some families out there. How do you feel about that? Ivan. Yeah, that's
Milat pretends okay. To be asleep.
I'm just tapping you because I don't know if you're...
So Ivan Milat's story, very sad one. Without going into the details of all those murders, we've heard it time and time again. Ivan passed away. Jennifer Stone, you make some interesting links between some of the murdered backpackers, King's Cross, and also we'll start with one unsolved murder from that particular area, the Rachel Childs cold case.
Yes. So Caroline Walters and her friend, they came from Porky's and Love Machine and the brothel in King's Cross.
So they are the nightclubs you might have heard Jennifer talk about in previous episodes of Whistleblowers. Porky's, the Love Machine and brothels. Please listen to one of our previous episodes about King's Cross. So Caroline Walters links in with these.
Yes, Caroline Walters. There was a sighting of the two girls at Blue Boar Inn, which is at Barrel. And they were actually, all those sightings were dismissed because by Task Force Air, it didn't fit the agenda of what they were doing for the work on Ivan Milat. See, Ivan Milat had come up because Alex Milat had reported that he had seen the two missing girls in a car with other men leaving and headed towards Belangolo State Forest. Now, that was Ivan's brother, Alex. So that was a coincidence of the two of them. So you started to think one, Caroline Waters was stabbed and the other one was shot. And they had thought that they had been drinking and partying there. There were lots of cigarette butts and alcohol. Remember, Ivan Milat did not drink or did not smoke. So you start going back through the evidence. Paul Onions, he saw Ivan Milat. He got picked up. He reckons it was Ivan Milat. He went to open the back of the car and there was a tyre there. Now, in the trial, that tyre on the back of the four-wheel drive was not there. So we've got similar cars, one Alex Milat found, saw and reported, and the other one we've got Paul Onions reporting, but they were both different. So Paul Onions said it had a tyre on the back. The car Alex Milat saw had a tyre on the back. The problem was Ivan Milat did not have that tyre. So that particular part of the puzzle doesn't fit together. Even today, it doesn't fit together. So Caroline Walters was found with her hair in her hand. Now, you've got to think, there were cigarette butts there. There was bottles of beer. Why didn't the police do any of that DNA? But when you go back through the trial, there was DNA for Caroline Walters, but it didn't match Ivan Milat. So you start to think, well, who was it? So you start to think, well, they were seen at Blue Boar Inn. So the other day I started to do a bit of research on Blue Boar Inn. It was a old-fashioned looking pub and it was at Barrel and not far from Belangolo State Forest. So you started to think, well, someone there may have had a four-wheel drive that's similar to what Ivan was driving, but it had a tyre on the back. Now, would that person had picked up someone coming along? What we notice is that all of the Ivan Milat murders, they say Ivan Milat because he got found guilty of it, but they were not all found in the same area. They were scattered a little bit, which if someone was taking a body there, they weren't putting them together. And like when I read about the case, and for some of the cases I've read about in America, they use the dense state forests or bushland to go hunting, but they're hunting humans. And they give them a head start. This is what I've, you know, alleged and believe. And maybe I've heard too many people talking about it and they go after it. But remember, these two victims, one was... they were seen together. They were in King's Cross. Now, if you've seen too much drug dealing and been involved, you're never going to leave Australia. And a lot of these backpackers, like Peter Falconio, they just vanish. So you can start to think, hang on, is there a link between the two? You know, so when I started to do the Blue Boar Inn, I haven't gotten a link to the car. But there was another, Rochelle Childs, she went missing. And it was like 8 to 10 years later. But it was still linking to Blue Boar Inn. And you start to think, when they get a, you know, a pub license, a hotelier, you know, a liquor license or a security guard license, because each pub has security guards thereabouts, they should have a DNA on them. Because then you start to see that DNA may turn up. It may not. But in King's Cross, what I noticed were the drugs were moving through the security guards. And they had a nickname for the coconut heads. But it was really the cocaine heads. So you start to think, okay. And remember, these two girls had been backpackers. And, you know, I'm not saying that they were totally working girls, but they were known in King's Cross. And others have said to me that they ended up with jewellery one of them gave when she was leaving King's Cross. So it seemed as though they were getting on the train and going. There was no one had picked them up. You know, some people had said to me Ivan had come into King's Cross at times. I don't know whether that's true or not. When you talk to Alistair Shipley, his nephew, he didn't think Ivan had ever really been to King's Cross. But you never know.
You never know. And, you know, another family that's waiting to hear from a member of the public or someone who might know is Rachel Child's family.
Her family's desperate plea to help solve one of Australia's forgotten murders.
She was my best mate and my sister.
A current affair tonight.
So Rachel Child was brutally murdered, burnt and dumped on the side of the road. It's a crime that's broken her family and frustrated police because to this day, no one has been arrested.
Well, that's right. They couldn't work out whether she was stabbed or strangled. But really, I know she wasn't shot because they never found any bullets. So you can think, well, Caroline Walters and her, they could link. Could that hair, the DNA from Caroline Walters, link into Blue Boreen? Now, that is a thought. And in late, the Channel 7, I believe, are doing a special on Ivan Milat. And they're taking it to that Newcastle area up the coast. And there's a couple that I've looked at that have gone missing from Coffs Harbour down to Newcastle. So there's more than just a few. There's some around Yamba. But you start to think, could there be a personal link between the two areas? And that was something that I had linked to and I had found. In the last couple of days, I've written to the police about those links. Because if I'm right, then a DNA would expose the murderer.
It definitely would. And with Rachel Child, you mentioned the car and the front seat.
Yes, well, her car was found at the Blue Boreen. And she was a fanatic about a car. She was actually working for a Holden mob. She told a boss that she had a meeting. Now, that's not a date. So when a woman says, I've gone for a meeting, no, I wouldn't call that a date. But it's someone that she wasn't upset about meeting. So she might have known this person beforehand. And you have no idea. You know, most of the people that are moving in the underworld, they're very smooth and quite charismatic. Yes. They've got a lot of stories. They have quite colourful lives. So you start to think, but they also move. But the DNA, you start to think, well, for Caroline Walters, a car was there. But for Rachel Childs, there was no car. But the same link was the Blue Boreen. So the car, the seat was moved. How it was locked was different to how she would normally leave it. So it was someone who was sloppy because they didn't move the car. But then there was no DNA. The police, there's no reports that there was DNA on the car. So that person, was it someone going to get rid of someone that knew too much?
It's an interesting aspect to this whole story. And we're going to move to Newcastle now. As Jennifer said, Channel 7 is about to release Buried Secrets. They're promoting their latest inquiry into some unsolved murders from Newcastle. And Mark Reddy from the ABC has done an interesting piece called Secrets of the Forest about 12 months ago about Ivan Milat, Australia's most notorious serial killer, now dead. How many more murders remain unsolved? And Mark Reddy, the ABC reporter, says Pam Mitchell still has photos of her sister, Leanne Goodall, sitting on the mantelpiece. Leanne has been missing since December 30, 1978, when she was seen leaving the Star Hotel in Newcastle, made famous by the Cold Chisel song, Star Hotel. Miss Mitchell believes she was most likely murdered by Ivan Milat, one of the serial killer's unconfirmed victims who may lie hidden in New South Wales forests.
Yes, well, there were three murders that linked in. Leanne Goodall, she was 20. Robin Hickey, 18. Amanda Robinson was 14. So that was a lot difference in age. And they disappeared between December 78 and April 79. While waiting for or getting off buses at bus stops on the Pacific Highway. So it's somebody who could have been driving up and down the highway. Sometimes that's truckies or people that are travellers, salesmen. So at the inquest, Mr. Abneithi, who was the state coroner at the time, who asked Norm Schreether, who was in charge of the Newcastle District Detectives at the time, why the Goodall disappearance has never looked at by a detective. You know, these main pieces of a crime, I have believed, linking to crimes that are done by drug runners, and they look at, you know, alleged backhanders so that the case doesn't go very further. But you've got to start and think, well, who is organising these police in that area that could link in even today, you know?
And you mentioned that Millett had been building roads in this area at the time of that particular disappearance. And the family said it would have been nice if he had have admitted to some of these murders before he died. But we don't know. Being a psychopath, he was never going to admit anything. But it would have been nice for the dementia that he had set in. We just heard about that in Tracy Grimshaw's interview. So, interestingly, you mentioned Roger Rogerson had a holiday house very close to one of the missing girls' homes.
Yes, Amanda Robinson.
Yeah.
I was contacted by a girl. I'll just call her, the letter Y, maybe. And I met her up in Newcastle, and she had heard about me, and I was taken to a meeting to do with cannabis. And she told me about her friend, Amanda Robinson, and she had gone to school with her. She only lived around the corner. She couldn't work out why she had disappeared. There was no reason. Now, in many of the cases, there's no reason, you know, but in 2001, Ivan Milat denied angrily at the inquest in the Toronto local court that he was responsible for the disappearances of Robin Hickey, Amanda Robinson and Lynn Goodall. So you start to think, when the bodies goes missing, that's all a pattern. These three are all missing people. So the police looked at other links to Parramatta and things like that, because Ivan Milat had worked on the roads and he had been, the links to the murders in the Southern Highlands were between 78 and 92. But what happened? What happened in 92? Did someone move? Yes, I know that the people that were running the Blue Boar Inn, their alleged son moved off. So that's a key.
The frustrating part about this unsolved Newcastle series of murders is that police work is very different today than what it was back then in 1978. And a lack of evidence in Leanne's disappearance is also a source of frustration for her family, Leanne Goodall. They didn't follow up certain leads. There were problems with the gathering of evidence, and the police force just wasn't what it is today. There has been a lot of speculation that there was a second killer, as Jennifer's just said, and we are waiting for more forensic testing on some of the evidence that has been found, and hopefully in time more will come forward. And Clive Small, the assistant commissioner, former assistant commissioner, said new technology had proved that theory wrong and confirmed Malact acted alone.
Well, that's the hair from Caroline Walters, and the DNA did not match Ivan Milat. Then she had DNA on her body that did not match Ivan Milat. The car did not match between Paul Onions and what Ivan Milat actually had at the time. It was different. Now, Alex Milat, his brother, would have known what car Ivan Milat was driving in. So why would have he gone to the police to report it? He just thought it was strange. This car was driving off. And you have to start and think that, and I have written about this and I have asked people, when these people go missing, you have to start and look at the hair colour, the height, the colour of the eyes, the colour of the skin, what they're wearing. is there any similarities between them? And what I noticed was a lot had brown hair and long and straight. But that was just my opinion as I went through a lot of them. And I noticed that when the newspapers are reporting about this, they don't want other investigators putting up their research on the internet utilizing their photographs. You know, the copyright rule. But shouldn't that be waived when the people are missing? Because we're there to solve the crime, not to allow the crime to remain unsolved.
Exactly. And whilst we have the police under the guise of Mr. Clean Skin, Clive Small, saying that there was not a second killer, what the police will admit is agree that there are probably more victims. So back then, you know, there was a bit of a protection racket in the New South Wales Police, and it explains why things weren't followed up. And without Paul Onions being brought back to Australia, Malat probably would still go on to kill more people.
That's only if he was the guilty one. Yes. But if he wasn't the guilty one, then you wonder. And also, a pattern within the murders, people could think is a serial killer, but it could be just a way to control a drug dealer. Now, that was my theory. You never know.
We may never know, Jennifer, but we'll continue to move on, and one day we may find out through forensic evidence or other means, a confession by someone in jail, possibly. But there we go, folks. There's our first episode of 2021, talking about psycho killers. Stay tuned next time when we come back with a slightly weird story from the eastern suburbs of Sydney, a missing financial advisor. And Jennifer Stone's going to bring us up to date with some of the hidden secrets about that story. So enjoy your new year. Channel 7 series on buried secrets will be coming to your screen soon. My name is Greg Kerr, and I'd like to direct you towards Jennifer Stone's webpage.
Oh, jenniferstone-author.org. And that links into the King's Cross sting.
So if you're interested in Jennifer's stories, go to that website. Like us on Anchor app, Google Podcasts, and we'll see you shortly for another episode of Whistleblowers.